Hello, plantpreneurs, and welcome to Series 4 of the Plant-Based Business Podcast, brought to you by the team at Vevolution. I'm Eric Amundsen, your co-host and co-founder at Vevolution.
And I'm Damien Clarkson. You will know me from previous seasons if you listened. I'm also going to be co-hosting the occasional episode in Season 4. I'm excited to welcome Eric to the podcast as we expand Vevolution and our reach to listeners around the world.
Over the last year, Vevolution has built the world's leading plant-based and cell ag network and investment marketplace. On the show each week, we explore what it takes to create and scale a plant-based business. We'll interview the best entrepreneurs and investors who are building solutions for a better and kinder world.
Thanks for joining us. Tune in each week to be inspired by entrepreneurial stories, tips for fundraising for your business, state-of-the-industry insights from leading investors, and success stories from Vevolution's new investment marketplace.
Eric here. Thanks for tuning in. I want to take a minute to tell you about our sponsor, Moonshot Collaborative. What's the single biggest factor in the success of your business? Your customers. And without any feedback and buy-in from them on your most important business decisions, it's easy to make expensive mistakes. And that's where Moonshot Collaborative comes in. They're a consumer research firm focused exclusively on actionable, affordable insights on plant-based consumers. As a member of the plant-based business community, I know the challenges that plant-based and alternative protein startups face when it comes to consumer research. The options are usually super expensive, and not really focused on the people actually buying those plant-based products. But Moonshot Collaborative offers a solution uniquely tailored to startups in this space. Not only is their research cost-effective and action-oriented, but every member of their panel has purchased a plant-based meat, egg, or dairy product in the 90 days prior to signing up. Moonshot Collaborative has a solution to fit any budget. You can choose from custom research, or multi-client surveys that offer group pricing, or maybe you need in-depth reports on the beliefs and behaviors of these key consumers. So if you're a startup looking to learn more about your customers, you can use code Vevolution to get 20% off your first 5 survey questions with Moonshot Collaborative. That's V-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, Vevolution, to get 20% off your first 5 survey questions. Just head to moonshotcollaborative.com to get started. I'm your host, Eric Amundsen, and today I'm joined by Ofe Grohn, co-founder and CEO of Plantish. Plantish is a company that creates whole-cut plant-based salmon from Tel Aviv, Israel. Ofe, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Yeah. How was, you've been traveling a lot recently. We saw each other in California. Before we get into it, I just wanted to highlight that I very briefly had some interactions with you, like via text but didn't really know each other. And you just came up to me when we met in California at Future Food Tech, and you were just so heartwarming, very open, just gave me a hug. Like, how is this the person that you've come to be? Have you always been, you know, so open to people and relationships? It was, you know, not a lot of people are like that, especially, you know, kind of in business, if you will.
Definitely. I felt in my career that the business world in one aspect wasn't for me, because I was too friendly, too open, you know, too much giving and less like, you know, thinking about my revenues and our targets, and always very, very helpful. And that's one of the reasons that I was many years in the NGO area. But when I moved back to this business of Plantish, so I just realized that we're all mission partners. You know, what you're doing at Vevolution and what I'm doing at Plantish, in the end, we're both doing the same. We're trying to create a better world. And I see you as a mission partner, and not in any case someone that I should not be open with and should not be welcoming. And the opposite, I should be helping you. And that's why I was so open. And I am the same, I hope, with any mission partner, because I just know we are all trying to do the same, create a better world, better food system, and to fight climate change and make a more compassionate world.
I think you explained it perfectly. It can be hard to be open, right, in business and kind of be friendly, but it feels like as though sort of this industry having mission aligned people side by side with you, it does, life is a little easier. It's a little bit, you know, it can be a little bit more fun that way. So you were in California for a couple of weeks. You were just in Switzerland over the last week. So it's probably been pretty busy for you. Are you done traveling for now? Like does it continue throughout the summer? What's kind of going on recently for you?
Cool. So, you know, we started Plantish because our oceans are basically dying and we're here to change that. And wherever we get the opportunity to share with a big amount of audience, with a large audience, the impact of eating fish on our oceans and our world, we take that opportunity. And in the last conferences, we got the opportunity to speak in front of hundreds of people and to tell about this. You know, it's a lot bigger than what we do in Plantish. We're just one company trying to solve it, but we need everyone to be aligned with that. So we're planning to go to many more conferences, many more talks, and make sure that every single person in the world will be aware of the impact of us consuming fish and seafood on the environment and the ocean, because we have to find sustainable sources, new sustainable sources of seafood. And if we don't do that, we're gonna find an empty ocean, and everything we can do to stop it, we're here for that. So we'll keep traveling and making sure that the message will be spread and that people will start acting differently.
We need to get you in front of a stadium of people.
Definitely. just invite me and I'm there.
Before we get into sort of the revolutionary, you know, solution that Plantish has created and, you know, a little bit more about the product and about the team, let's set the stage. Let's talk about the oceans. And I think you just kind of previewed it a little bit. I'm going to run through a few facts about our oceans. Feel free to correct me or add anything. I'm going to read five quick facts. Number one is 46% of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is made up of fishing nets. Number two, only 5% of the world's oceans are marine protected areas. That one blew my mind, only 5%. Three, the ocean is the biggest carbon sink on the planet. 93% of all carbon is stored in the ocean. Number four, 3 billion people, probably a little bit more than that, rely on seafood as their main source of protein. And number five, there's been multiple studies that, you know, we may have fishless oceans in a matter of decades if we don't change the way we source our fish. So, and Afik, you know, can you tell us a little bit about the, you know, the demand for fish and our fish stocks, and tie that into a bow for us about why, you know, why this was such a big deal for you and how this kind of started your journey?
Right. So about 70% of the world marine fish stocks are overfished, and the demand for fish and seafood in general is just growing year after year, and the opposite with our oceans. So our ocean, instead of creating more and more fish, are creating less and less fish because we eat more than the ocean can supply. And there is a big issue, not only economical issue, that, you know, some businessmen can say, oh, supply goes down, demand goes up. It's not an economical issue. It's a disaster for our world, because we might find an empty ocean, as you just mentioned. And an empty ocean means no more food supply for those developing countries, for the 3 billion people that rely on seafood as their main source of protein, as you said. And it means no more food for land animals, which rely on seafood as their food. And it means no more coral reefs, because it's part of the ecological ecosystem. And it means basically no more life, no more oxygen.
Why is it that this is kind of just me going further into this a little bit, but why is it that you think that so many consumers are, you know, kind of willing to let go of fish being something that they need to worry about? You know, I know so many people, I know a lot of people who are fairly plant-based, you know, fairly willing to kind of understand, you know, what they're eating. They really understand, you know, why cows and chickens and some of these land animals, but like, it feels like fish and our oceans are just being very scapegoated and forgotten about. Is it as simple as it's just we don't see it? Is it as simple as that? Or is there another reason that this has been like the last, it feels like this is the final frontier?
I think that fish considered to be healthy. Okay, so it was easier for the, let's say, the movement of sustainability activists to tackle beef and some ground beef or ground meat, which also very bad for us.
Right, nutritionists have been criticizing red meat for a long time now.
Exactly. So, when you go to the doctors, the doctor will tell you eat fish. That's healthy. You have no cholesterol. Like that's the good stuff. Okay. So it was a larger issue because of that. Okay. Because you are telling someone to stop eating something that they think it's healthy for them, and it does have nutritional values which are good for us. However, the way that we produce fish today is not healthy at all. Our oceans are full of microplastics. Our oceans are full of mercury. When we go and doing fish farming, we're using antibiotics. So the practices today are not healthy. But in order to convince people that it's not healthy, you need to go a long way. And it was a lot easier that other authorities were already telling that meat is very not healthy because of many stuff. So it was an easier place to tackle. That's what I think. And when I was working in the NGO industry and I tried to create more plant-based solution, it was easier for us to tackle beef, for example. However, now people are more aware of the unsustainable practices of raising cattle, you know, beef, sheep, chicken, everything is like more, people are more aware. And on the and we just forgot that the main issue is also there in the oceans, and the ocean is actually most of the of our world. You know, it's almost 70% of our world is ocean, and cleaning our oceans from animals is cleaning our entire world from animals, and that's huge. And what I found today that we're 10 years ago. We started what we're doing today with fish. We started with beef. So like we're now in the opening line that all the NGOs, I think on the next decade are going to fight for fish the same way they fought for meat. So I'm optimistic that we're not alone. And there is a movement that will help us to take that messaging and get people to change their behavior.
Well, I'm hopeful for this movement as well. You all are going to be very much so a part of that. I would love to hear a little bit more about the beginning of your career. You have a lot of different experiences in software, in production. You were with Vegan Friendly for a long time. Can you tell us about those experiences? And do you believe that you were always supposed to be an entrepreneur?
When I'm looking back, I was always an entrepreneur. Okay, even as a kid in school, I was planning parties, and it became a business when I was in high school, and I was always starting things, creating things. So back then, I didn't know how it called, but now I know that I was an entrepreneur since very early age, and so I guess the answer is yes. And about my career, so about 10 years ago, I was back then in the military service in Israel. We have three years of army, and I just got exposed to what's happening to animals in the food system, and just decided that this is something that I want, that I care about. So I changed the way I eat. I became vegan. I just started to tell everyone about what's happening in our food system and that we need to change that. And when I finished my army, I just found a guy named Omri, which was starting an NGO called Vegan Friendly, and I just volunteered to be a part of it. So I was volunteering there, and on the same time, I tried to start my own business. So I had an event production company, which grew to be quite a huge company in 3 years. We made mainly software events. And on that, on the same time, I was, organizing protests for a vegan friendly the NGO, and I was became an activist. So I was working on the days, and at night I was standing in stalls explaining people about our corrupted food system and trying to get some donations so we can do some more projects in the NGO. So I was an activist since then. And after 3 years, the event production company in the software space merged into a software distribution company. And I find myself managing a quite big software company. And I've done it for 2 years. It was very successful. We grew the company in 70% during my time. But on the same time, Vegan Friendly became something that can employ. And the thinking about me stepping back from the business world and dedicating my life 100% for something that I truly believe that that's the future we should fight for, caught me in a position that I just left a very comfortable CEO position and joined Vegan Friendly as a vice president to help Omri to, scale the organization, make more impact. And I really believe that there is a lot of place to do more activism, smart activism. And what I brought into Vegan Friendly is the business approach. So instead of walking, like standing on the streets with a sign, like go vegan, I was working with companies like the importer of Beyond Meat and Nestle, the international company, and PepsiCo with one of their divisions in Israel. And I helped them with the go-to-market strategy for plant-based solutions to the mass market in Israel. Because I found that I have the understanding of how to take those vegan products and make them popular. And Israel became one of the most popular vegan countries in the world during that time. And it was super successful. And the organization grew from about 4 employees to 40 employees in the 2 years that I've been there. And it was helping us to go to the UK after. And I was founding the UK site for Vegan Friendly and manage that. And basically what happened is that through all the time, I was so optimistic to see the great solution that we have in beef and chicken and pork and almost any animal, the market has started to grow. But the only one that left without any solution that is catching up and getting market share is the seafood. And I was just speaking with Nestle and other companies and told them, come on, let's do seafood product. And I found out that it's different there because most of the market is made out of whole cuts. Okay, it's made out of filet. Okay, and the technologies that are available today can create great fish burgers, fish fingers, canned tuna, but to create the whole thing, to create the whole fish, for that you need more advanced technology. And because I didn't believe that anyone back then was close to that, so I thought there is an opportunity for me to go and do it, to go and hire the top PhDs, to go and join forces actually with the top PhDs, because I cannot do it alone. And maybe the Israeli brain, let's say, can tackle that whole cut thing and be the new, let's say, impossible or beyond of fish. And that's pretty excited me. So I just went and started it.
So what were some of the first steps in launching Plantish, and how was it that you joined forces with your co-founders? Because, you do have a very unique group of co-founders and expertise that ranges from PhDs to just this very eclectic group. How did you kind of find that team and build out some of those first steps? I think that's a very, important story to tell.
Great. So first of all, when I told Vegan Friendly that I'm moving on to the next thing, they were very supportive and excited that I'm going to build something like that. So I got, first of all, support from my home. So that helped me. And then I just took the phone and called the director of GFI Israel, Nir, which is a good friend of mine who used to work for Vegan Friendly before. And I told him what I'm planning. So he told me, listen, I'm going to take care of you. Like, he really took care of me. And he said, I believe in you. You should do it. And I'm going to help you to find the top scientist. And the GFI team in Israel has matched me with two of my three co-founders. And I met them through GFI. They reached out to GFI with some ideas for research in the alternative protein sector. They were very, very impressive PhDs, and they wanted to do other stuff, but the GFI team was very impressed from them. And they knew that they need someone like me with the business knowledge and the entrepreneurial skills. So they matched us together. Mm. So that's how I met two of the three co-founders. And the fourth co-founder, which is Hila, I met her through the top PhD, the professor of 3D printing in Israel. And I just came to him with my idea. So he told me, you have to get Hila on board because she can help you. She can make it happen. So basically I found Ron, who is an animal sciences PhD and a fish expert. I found Ariel, which is our CTO, and he is a 3D bioprinting PhD. Okay, so it's very unique, and
so specific.
He's so specific, and he's vegan, and you know, it's like meant to be. So he came up with the initial idea of how to print fish in a scalable way, and then when I took his idea to this professor in the Hebrew University, which I reached out to, he connected me with Hila, which she is a PhD in chemistry, and she was the vice president of a 3D printing unicorn. So I just got the dream team to start this. And because I saw this dream team, I knew that if I will get them on board, it will be easy to raise funds and to start running, because which investor will not fund this team? Okay. So I just started with getting us together and actually just committed to them that they will get paid in the next month or so. And then I knew that I have about 2 months to get funded. But with them, after 1 month, we got funded. And then it was pretty easy to start big. And, you know, we started a company with $2 million, and it took us about a month or two to get all of it, available for us. So it's just a matter of a team. A strong team can raise a lot. A great idea with a weak team cannot raise at all. And we and our idea was very not sophisticated. Like today, what we're doing is 100% more complicated than what we thought we will do in the beginning. But they knew that they're betting on that team to make that happen, and I hope they had a good bet.
I've talked to a few founders who feel as though they have stumbled upon sort of this dream team, right? And I think that's so key to be cognizant of and to realize that that's happening in the moment, right? And not a lot of people will run into that scenario. A lot of founders may have a really great product, and then from there they have to build out the team based off of the white spaces that they have and the challenges that they have, and that can be a lot harder of a road. And so you have your team, this superstar team of
just, you said something that I have to come in. Okay, yeah. Team is everything. Okay, yeah. Product is nothing. Team is everything. If you have a the worst team, but you have the best product, after a few months, someone else will create the same product, and with a better team, they will do better marketing, they will hire better people, and they will win. In the end, team is everything. And investors, especially early stage investors, they know it. And when they bet on a company on the early stage, of course, they want to know the potential of the market. Okay, so if you're doing something that they don't believe in the market to be developed and everything, they will not invest. But the team is the most important thing. And it's not only the co-founder, it's also the team that's coming after. So we are paying attention for every single hire. We are okay paying more, but being sure that we got someone that is going to be a superstar. And that's what we're trying to do at Plentish. from the first co-founder to the last employee.
So you have this dream team and you start to build out this roadmap for the path of the company, right? You secured the funding, the first round of funding to get you kind of your runway. You know, just guide me a little bit through the first couple of steps or kind of the next steps of how do you decide it on, you know, sort of the next product or the prototype that you wanted to pursue and like the roadmap that was going to be, you know, from that point until say today, you know, what were the decisions like? Was it literally you and the team sitting at a table and saying, this is where we're going to go? Or how does that work as a founder? Because you're building something, right? It's tricky.
Yeah, it's a good question. So basically it was simple. I just logged into like some statistical data, which was free on Google. And I looked, which fish is the most popular? One. Two, which fish is the most unsustainable? Second. And third, which fish is more premium? Okay, because in the end, if you want to tackle something in the beginning, which is going to be very cheap to buy today, so it's going to be very hard to go mainstream with that. Okay, if we're going to make canned tuna, which is like a few dollars per can, it's going to be very hard for us to compete on price and to build something that the non-vegans will be excited about. And everywhere we went, salmon was on the top. Okay, salmon, top popular, very not sustainable. The price is premium. Like everything was salmon, but also salmon is very complicated. Look at the salmon. It has very, very unique structure. You have the pink, you have the white stripes, you have a lot of, you have a very specific look for the salmon, which is very challenging to create it. So, you know, we just took the challenge because we believe that this should be our hero product. Like, you know, Beyond Meat and Impossible were doing the burger in the beginning. That was their hero product. Everyone loves burger. Everyone loves salmon.
Everyone.
You know, it's a fish. It's a fish that everyone are familiar with. If I'm telling you locus or cod or any other kind of fish, you will say some love it, some don't know about it even. But salmon is like a catalyst, you know. You know what it is, how it tastes. And when you go to a marriage of your friend, that's the fish that you're eating.
It's so true. It's like, I have a lot of friends who, like I mentioned, are pretty plant-based, but it's always like, oh yeah, I just have salmon like once a week, right? And it's like the one thing. It's so true. It's almost like the burger or the bacon of the rest of the animals, right? You have to, hit those key products. So let's talk about kind of moving forward. So what can you tell me about Plantish? How is it made? What are some of the novel technologies, you know, that you all have created, whether it's, you know, obviously within reason, what you feel comfortable sharing with us. Tell us a little bit more about the product currently.
Yeah, sure. So the main issue is that it's very hard to create complex structures. Okay. So to create a burger, like a ground meat, you don't have to start a puta company. You can just go home and, you know, take some mushrooms and put it with some other vegetables and make a burger, put it in the oven. And after 20 minutes in the oven, you get a burger, okay? But if you will do the same, you will not get a fish, right? So to get a fish, what we understood, we need to tackle first the complex structure, which means that we have to deposit each of the materials in the exact same place. So we have the connective tissue, the muscle tissue, the fat components, each of them has to be in the exact same place. The other thing is the texture, okay? The texture is different. Why it's different? Because it has a direction, a specific direction. Each fiber is not only deposited in a specific place, but it also looking toward a specific direction. And that's why the bite of a steak or a fish is different than a bite of a beef burger or fish burger. And the last thing is doing both of them at scale is something that the food industry didn't solve. So we came up with an idea of taking the 3D printing, which in 3D printing, you can deposit each of the materials in the exact place and looking toward an exact location and just creating a new machine, which is fish machine based on the 3D printing, but in a way that we can make it scalable. How can we make it scalable? So when you have a 3D printer, usually you can create anything. Okay, you can put inside like a draw of a fish, it will make fish. You can put inside a draw of a table, it will make table. But let's say that all you want to do in your life is just fish. So you redesign the machine in a way that it can do only fish, but a lot faster, because you can have more engines doing more stuff on the same time. You know exactly what's the shape you're going to do. So you have to have less movement of parts in the machine, because you can just make it stable to the shape of the fish. And there are a lot of stuff that you can do to make sure that you will get fish. So our machine can create only one thing, fish. Which fish? Today it's salmon. And if we want to do something else, we just need to change the materials, maybe to do some modifications. But basically we built a fish machine, and it's not a conventional 3D printing machine, but this fish machine built to be scalable. And that's what we're developing at Plantish. And with that machine, we hope to be able to feed the world with fish without hurting a single fish. So that's the whole idea.
So you have had your first prototype. You've been going to these events and sort of having people taste that prototype. Has it been difficult to kind of get that feedback from people who you're so closely aligned with?
Every day that I'm taking a bite from the Plenty Salmon, it's different than the bite I had a day before. Usually it's better, sometimes it's worse, and then we're doing another iteration and getting it better. But every month we get a better new version of Plenty Salmon. So I'm just dreaming about what will be the bite 10 years from today, 20 years from today. Isn't it going to be better than fish? I believe it is. I believe it will be. And I'm not the only one who believes it. And that's why I think we got so much attention and confidence from top investors, because they believe on our team to be able to execute a better fish than fish.
That's a great way to explain it. I think that you've segued to kind of my next question quite well, right? You have this product and this team that can continue to improve, and you've raised some capital, which is, you know, what Vevolution is all about. What are some of your, you know, tips generally, you know, for a vegan business, someone who's people who are very mission aligned? That's a big part of, you know, the plant-based industry. It's very, very passionate people. And so I think maybe raising capital can be a challenge. So what are some tips that you have for some of those newer entrepreneurs looking to secure capital?
For us, like, the main tip is to be transparent with investors for the good and for the bad. Okay. So when I started to reach out to investors, I didn't pretend that we know all the answers and we're going to figure it all out. I just said what we have. We have an incredible team. We know that a seafood market for alternatives must be there, because otherwise we're in a big problem. So we believe that someone will tackle that out. And we believe that because we're a big, strong team, we have a chance to be the team that will tackle that out. And not promising that we're going to do it 100%, we're going to make it. No, I'm still not confident that 100% we're going to make it, but I think we have a good chance to make it. And it's worth the bet of investors and of the employees and of me spending years on it, because I believe that there is a chance. And if there is a chance to do a change, to make a change, let's try to make it. The second thing is also, when we got some interest from investors, we were open about it with other investors, okay? And it helped us to get them work faster, because they know we're not the only ones that are looking at Plantish. This and this investor, that and that investor, she's looking at Plantish too. So it created a kind of a race on, you know, putting like attention on Plantish. And I think that the only thing we did is just making sure that if someone is interested in at Plantish, let's make others be aware of it, because maybe it will accelerate the process and we can fundraise faster and in higher valuations. And in the end, it's not a reason that it worked, because no one will bet on you just because others are betting on you, but it really helped you to get things move faster. And then you have a place to negotiate, because if someone wanted to invest in you in X valuation, when he knows that someone else is providing you with an offer of better type valuation, it gives you more advantage on competing on that.
Hey everyone, Eric here. Did you know that there's 1.3 billion tons of waste generated each year by the food industry globally? The Plant-Based Business Podcast is created with support from Hira, Europe's fastest growing plant-based meat company. Rooted in activism and the desire to drive positive change, the company's credentialed R&D team, the Tech Rebels, is spearheading a new food frontier that prioritizes sustainability. Going beyond what's been technologically possible to date, Hira's new approach uses nutrient-dense materials from industry, byproduct, and non-utilized plant sources. So imagine, instead of just focusing on proteins from a legume seed, Hira is finding ways to leverage the functionality of whole plants in their naturally occurring structures. Over the past year, Hira has quadrupled the size of its expert R&D team and will launch up to 10 new products this year. Follow Hira Foods, that's H-E-U-R-A, on LinkedIn to see how it's tackling the big, unsolved global food challenges using low carbon footprint technologies. Now back to the show. I'm really excited to see some of the next steps. A question that I was curious about from your perspective, because obviously your product is very different from, you know, a burger per se. What do you think investors really care about the most? Because I see a lot of debate in this as far as the future of food tech, whether it's taste, is it the price parity? You said earlier, it's very much still the team executing everything, but as far as the product goes, you know, what do you think really is the key indicator for the future?
As always, with any product, taste always matters, okay? Plant-based or not, people gravitate towards food that tastes good. As for price parity, this is also super important, and we aim to be competitive in our pricing because otherwise people will not buy the product, okay? When you go to the grocery store, you look at the pricing, and if something is high in price, you're just not grabbing it from the shelf. So I think taste is number one. Price is number two, and all the rest, nutritional, sustainability, all the rest, you know, is way, way, way behind. Now, when you see a deck of a founder, sometimes you see them thinking about the sustainability, thinking about the nutritional values, clean labeling, no soy, no gluten. Who cares? Someone coming to the grocery store, he wants something that tastes good, and he wants something that is cheap, that he's not needing to sell his house to eat a piece of a burger, okay? And in the end, the ones that will make the most tasty product and the most competitive in price, those will be the winners, period. And if someone will have a better ingredients, cleaner label, whatever, if it's not gonna taste more, plant-based solutions will stay a niche. The only way that the plant-based products will be mainstream is if we make it taste as good or better, and in a price the same or lower, okay? That's everything. And I am frustrated because when some other founders coming for help, they're pitching me 90% the sustainability. And in the end, you know, I care about sustainability, you care about sustainability, but when people go to the grocery store, they're not grabbing the sustainable food, they're grabbing the tastier food. We need to be the tastier food.
No, and I'm a consumer, you're a consumer. Like sometimes we may think about the sustainability. Sometimes we may think about the label, right? Maybe every fifth time I go to the store, I'm like, oh yeah, this peanut butter has palm oil. And I really do think about that. But for the most part, 90% of the time I go to the store and I'm choosing what I want to eat, I'm like, what? Is this going to taste good? Like, this is what I want to eat. So I think those things are important. But when it comes to creating a company and to scaling a product, yeah, like I see it a lot as well, right? With hundreds of pitch decks and hundreds of companies who are really focused on their clean labels and their sustainability. And I just kind of wonder if they're going to make it, right? If they're going to be focused enough in the end.
Yeah, we need to remember that me and you, we're not the typical consumer. In the end, you need to think about your grandmother, okay? when she goes to the grocery store, how much time she spends on the sustainability and the ingredients. Okay. And I look at the grocery stores, how many kids are there and how many grandmothers are there? Okay. Yeah. A lot more grandmothers are there. Okay. And if we want to, who is actually shopping? Okay. So we're not the shoppers. Okay. If we want to create food for me and you, we make the most sustainable and the best ingredients. And if it's not taste as good, but we feel that it's not meat and we don't want to hurt the planet, we'll eat it. But if you want to create a change, taste and price, period.
Love it. So before we finish up, we have some quick fire questions for you. And you just think about it as little as possible and give us your quick answers. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. So why do you get up in the morning?
So I believe that I am lucky to have the ability to create a change in one of the most important topics today. And that's what drives me, actually, to get up in the morning and to try to make a significant change in the world we live in.
What one resource or factor has had the biggest impact on your business so far?
So because we raised money very early and we raised quite a lot, it helped us to get the top talent. And getting the top talent is getting us a better product, a better process. We ran faster. We can get more funds easily. And I think that the talent at Plantish is the one resource that we have, which is creating the change for us.
What are your top three books or podcasts that you'd recommend to entrepreneurs?
Cool. So I read many, but I'm just thinking about the last ones that I read that I recommend. So one is Shoe Dog, of the founder of Nike. One is No Rules of the Netflix story. And a podcast that I really like is How I Built This by Guy Raz. And that's the three that I would choose.
What do you know now that you wish you knew when you started?
I know now that almost nothing at Plantish is a secret. When I started Plantish, I thought that I need to be very quiet about the technology, about the IP, about the proteins that we're using. In the end, it's a bullshit. Okay? The only thing that matters is how you execute stuff and the team you have. And if you tell more, you get more advice. If you get more advice, you get the product better and you're better. So, and I think many founders are just so secretive about what they're doing. And in the end, that's not the winning strategy. The winning strategy is tell what you're doing, get feedback and get better. And if you're so protective in the end, you don't get enough feedback and you're just doing wrong. So, that's what I found out.
Perfect. It's like who can make mistakes faster, right?
Basically.
It's counterintuitive, which I think is the thing. What's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome so far with Plantish?
So the challenge is daily. Okay. When I'm opening my LinkedIn every day, I get like 10 offers. All of them sounds pretty good. And what I want to do is just say yes to 8 out of the 10. But in the end, if I say yes to 8 out of the 10, I'm just going to just go for opportunities that are not necessarily the focus that I need now. So the challenge is to stay focused, is to say no to 9 out of 10 opportunities. But the one that you say yes, that's the one which is the right decision to spend your time on. And I'm one CEO, and in the end, I need to choose where I'm spending my time. And it's always hard for me to think where is the right place. And usually it's not on those opportunities I get through LinkedIn.
It's very true. You have to say no and clear the calendar.
Exactly.
Last question, and we'll wrap it up. Probably the most important question is, what do you do to keep yourself happy?
So I'm just sharing everything that's going on with everyone. So I heard from many founders that the CEO or the founder is alone, is very lonely. I don't feel lonely. I feel that everything that happened to me, if it's with the board, with investors, with business partners, I'm just sharing it with, you know, my co-founders, my employees, my family, friends, and I'm just getting tons of support. And that's the way that I'm staying, you know, sane with all of this crazy journey. Because people in the end, they just want to know what's going on with you and they want to help. And even if it's bad news, if you tell it, maybe they can help. And if you keep it for yourself, then you're feeling lonely. And in the end, they will know it and it won't change a lot. So I'm trying to be very open with everything going on at Plantish. When we have an investors coming in, they know his name, her name, why they're why we're interesting in working with them. We're just trying to be very open, and that's what helping me to stay sane.
Well, I dream of the day that I'll have, you know, maybe one of your final products in a restaurant here in the US, and to be able to try Plantish and share it with my friends and family and look back at this conversation and, like, you know, I was able to talk to this guy like many years ago. So
I just wanted to add last thing, that it's very important to get support from your family. And in the end, without my family, if they will not be supportive, I have a wife, I have a daughter and another one on the way, and they're having a hard time because of me being at Plantish 24/7. And if I wouldn't get their support, Plantish will not be successful and will not be anything. So it's very hard to make sure that things at home are good before you start anything.
Well, thank you for stopping me there. I think the support of friends and family when you're running a company is probably the most important. They're the ones that you're going to turn to. They're the ones that you're going to talk to after work, before work. They're the ones who are kind of bearing your energy and kind of, you know, lifting you up constantly. So I think you hit that spot on, and we should all do the same. Make sure that we're with each other, not alone, with our families, with their friends. Any final thoughts, Ofik, before we head out?
I just wish that every smart person in the world will work for something impactful. You know, seeing so many good brains working for industries which have nothing to do with improving the world, just getting me insane, you know? I just want every person in the world that can give a value. You know, you don't have to be a founder to change the world, but you can work for a better company. You can work for a better cause. And if someone will hear this podcast and because of that will not go to, I don't know, to a tech company with zero impact and work for an impactful company because of this talk, you know, I made it. It's worth everything. So that's my main thing, and that's what I'm trying to speak with students at school when they call me to tell about Plantish. Go do something impactful. That's it.
Do something impactful. Well, I certainly think that you are. Congrats to you and your team. Thank you for sharing your story today about Plantish, Ofik, and we'll hope to see you soon. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for your time, Eric. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Hello, Eric here, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Vivolution. We're building the world's leading plant-based and cell-ag community and marketplace. Head on over to www.vivolution.com to join our marketplace of investors and startups building solutions for a brighter future. In 2021, more than 25 startups secured partial or full round funding on Vivolution. And if you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review. And please consider sharing it on your preferred social media channels. It really helps more people discover the positive stories we're sharing from around the world. Please give us a shout and tag us when you tell others about the podcast. You can find us on all social media channels at Vivolution. And you can email us at hello@vivolution.com if you want to reach out. We love hearing from our listeners. As always, thank you to Bridie Allison Child, who edits the podcast, and all of our guests and you, our listeners, for supporting the show. See you next time.